Good morning. We're very glad to have our class this morning on evangelism. We've been studying the book by John Leonard that's titled Get Real. I gave a little bit of a homework assignment last week, although I think you can probably think of answers to this question right now, too. What are some of the things that you're fearful of in evangelism? Oftentimes when I talk to people about sharing their faith, they talk about being afraid. So what is it that makes you afraid when it comes to evangelism? Yeah.
I'm afraid of getting it wrong.
Okay.
Giving the friend or acquaintance the wrong impression.
Mm-hmm.
Of who Jesus is.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
I would say rejection.
Mm-hmm.
Not that they would reject the gospel per se, but maybe reject me as a person.
Yeah. Yep.
That was fine as long as you kept your religion to yourself.
Yeah. There's something strange gets introduced into the relationship, and you're fearful of that rejection. Yeah.
Okay, it goes against the grain of normal interaction, in one sense, of breaking the status quo.
It's a little bit like rejection. I'm going to say people think you're weird.
That's too late.
Okay. Anything else?
My life doesn't reflect the gospel enough to speak about it.
I'll summarize that. Hypocrisy, is that okay?
Yeah.
So your words, you're conscious that your words...
It would immediately make them reflect, well, this guy is a joyful, happy person. Why does he speak of joy?
Yeah. Yeah. You've hit on several that the author and one other author that I wanted to tell you about summarizes. You've hit on three of them. He has one more, not so much in our culture, but imagine rejection can sometimes be quite extreme, and so in some cultures it can even tend towards persecution. And I wouldn't say that we have any form of persecution, but again, sometimes when I talk to people, that may come up in their mind that there'd be some form of persecution, loss of privilege or loss of ability to work or things like that. Not so much, I think, in our culture right now, but it's certainly something that that people think about. The other author that I wanted to tell you about is a man named Bill Fay. He has a book called Share Jesus Without Fear, or Sharing the Gospel Without Fear, something like that. Karen, you were nodding your head. Do you know that author?
I was thinking there was one, Sharing Your Faith Without an Argument.
Okay.
I don't know if that's how he originally started it years ago when we heard him in our church.
That may be, I may be getting the title wrong, but I think it was Without Fear. But there maybe had a companion book that was Share Jesus Without an Argument. And he gives these four that you've tracked along with quite well. Fear of rejection, fear of not knowing enough, fear of offending someone else, and fear of ridicule or persecution. And begins to discuss about some of the ways in which we might address those fears. And I'm going to track along with John Leonard in his chapter that is titled Listen More Than You Speak, in which he is going to address some of those fears. We're going to address some of those fears in just a little bit. But before we get to that, let me just make an observation that Bill Fay does, and that is just to encourage you. You know that you know enough. You may have a fear of maybe getting it wrong, but I'll remind you of some of the things that we've studied with Leonard already. That encourages you to see the work of conversion as being God's work, and that the manner in which we do that and the method in which we do that, God is gracious and generous, and the conversion is not dependent on you and on your ability to say things just right. And so we've talked quite a bit about a man-centered view of conversion and how that can sometimes silence us. Also, Bill Fay talks about just says most Christians are likely overloaded by what they know and. Need to get some of it out. He even says they're constipated. so we hold it in, thinking we don't know enough, and actually we know plenty. And some people will say, "Well, I'm afraid maybe I'll get stumped by a question." And quite likely, you are well acquainted with the gospel and well acquainted with the Bible, much more acquainted with 99% of the skeptics and the individuals that you'll ever meet that will raise questions. And so take some confidence in that.
And another point is like, okay, suppose they, you know, do stump you on a question.
Mm-hmm.
The fact is, you can point out, it's like, that you're not presenting yourself as knowing all
mm-hmm.
the answers
mm-hmm. yeah.
and all that type of stuff. And no one from any point of view can really know all the answers to all the objections to their point of view. The question is, which point of view doesn't have, you know, can answer a whole lot of the objections?
Mm-hmm. And quite frankly, it's our right to say, you know what, that's a really good question. I'm not sure how to answer that. But would you give me a week and let's get back together. Let's meet down at Aspen. We'll have a cup of coffee and I'll tell you what I found out. And what that type of response does is it engages them with God's Word and does not turn them away by trying to cook up some answer. Doesn't turn them away as if they're foolish for asking the question. It acknowledges, yeah, that's a really good question. And it's okay to be stumped sometimes and to admit that. Which begins to get at some of the manner in which we want to be engaged in the gospel. And Leonard's point in this chapter is to deal mostly with the manner in which we interact with other people and the manner in which we communicate the gospel. And we want to affirm that the gospel is a truth that we communicate, that there is something that needs to be imparted and spoken. And so there is a give as well as a take. But what Leonard is going to lay his finger on is that many times in evangelism, from the modern evangelical mindset, the sharing of the gospel is only giving. And we go to give the gospel, and we give it and give it and give it. And his point of clarification, you know, he likes to kind of play with things. His point of clarification is that we often take a stance of one-way communication when we think of evangelism, that we go with the mind that we're going to drive home our point, we're going to say it maybe over and over again and give no room for interaction or objection. Leonard even talks about people equating evangelism in their minds with preaching. And we would affirm that preaching has a gospel aspect to that, and that the God uses the preaching of the word to convert sinners. But not all, preaching is evangelism, but not all evangelism is preaching. And so one of the tendencies is, if you equate evangelism with preaching in your mind, is that you raise it in your mind to the level of, well, this is only for professionals. And so here's another area for fear that comes in. It's for those who really know their Bibles, and I don't know the Bible well enough, or a variety of things, let alone the ability to speak on the gospel for 30 or 40 minutes, if that's what you think evangelism is. So his contention is that that sharing the gospel should not be one-way communication. And keep that in mind. It should not be one-way communication. I want to develop that idea a little bit and use an example that the author uses in his book. And I may need to call on you, Dave, to help me out with this one, because what the example that he uses is, he talks about one-way communication being a position of power. One-way communication is a position of power, and he uses an example from boxing. The rumble in the jungle. So, Dave, what happened in the rumble in the jungle?
Well, it was a monumental fight, Ali and Foreman.
I didn't write down the date.
The late 70s.
Yeah.
And George beat on him for, I think, 8 rounds, if I'm not mistaken. And Ali simply said, "Is that all you got, George?" And he proceeded to teach him a lesson. And Ali won.
That's, you know, the term rope-a-dope? You know, rope-a-dope?
Yeah. I was alive.
So he uses the illustration in this way, that Ali was the older fighter in this case. George Foreman was the younger, the stronger. And what Ali did was, as Foreman just kind of stood over him in this position of power and just pounded him, is that Ali had a mentality that I'm going to absorb these, I'm going to wear him down. And the rope-a-dope is that he wore him down until he was all tired, and then he took him to school and ended up winning the fight.
That's the marketing. The truth is, Ali was just tired. And so he held up his hands for a long time, and he was clever.
Yeah.
And so when I asked him, you know, why were you so tired? I wasn't tired. It was rope-a-dope. So it was meant to be an insult against Foreman. And to show Ali's superiority, but the truth is, Ali was just tired. He held his hands up because he couldn't fight anymore like that.
Yeah. Yeah.
So it all depends on who markets.
Exactly. Exactly. Well, so if a fighter comes in that is much more powerful and starts raining down blows on his opponent, then the... Well, what's the response of someone that is underneath that position? Well, they just kind of cover up. They're always retreating. They go in other directions. They're always blocking. They're always defensive in that fight. So we can sometimes approach evangelism as if we're going to pound that other individual until they understand the gospel. The effect is, they just cover up and they run and they run and they run. And then maybe they sucker punch you. No.
But it's a pretty poor analogy because Ali won the fight.
He did. But does the evangelist win the fight if the guy just covers up and runs?
Well, right. I mean, so if all you're doing is raining down blows, you may not win.
Yeah, exactly. And I think that's the point that Leonard's trying to make, is that you think you're being successful when you're not even landing punches sometimes. The guy just covers up and runs. So, now, one-way communication is what he's concerned with, and I want to nuance that a little bit. I said that there is a place for one-way communication. We've looked at Mark 5:19 before. That's where Jesus told the demoniac that was healed, he said, go home and tell how much God has done for you. There is something to tell. There's something to speak. And the gospel has a spoken element to it. It has a written element to it. There's a communication of truth. You know, the Great Commission. There's something told in the Great Commission, right? What is told? Go therefore and make disciples of all nations.
Baptizing them in the name of the Father, Son, and Holy Ghost.
Teaching them all things that I have commanded you. And so there's the teaching, the baptizing, there's truth to impart. And so don't hear this and think, well, all you need to be is a good listener. We do need to speak the gospel. But the manner in which we do that does have an aspect of being a listening ear, and that the effects of listening are what we're going to talk about next, and how that communicates the gospel in a good way. So we're not going to rope-a-dope here. We're going to think of the effects of listening. The first thing is that you take a position of weakness. If one-way communication is to try to assert your authority and to talk and to talk and to talk and not to allow anybody to interrupt or to ask questions, then if you listen, then you're taking a position of weakness. Now, we don't like that very much today. We like to be in control. We like to be in that position of power. So let's explore that a little bit. In your own relationships with others, think about the conversations that you've had when someone has genuinely listened to you. Describe that conversation, describe that relationship.
Loving, because I actually cared enough to listen to what you say.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I don't interrupt what you're saying.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. That's one of the, maybe a sucker punch in arguments is to interrupt someone in the middle of what they're saying and have no interaction whatsoever. So they listen to the end of what you're saying and they don't interrupt. Somebody was...
And they interact with what you're saying, you know that they've listened because they're responding.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So instead of covering up like a turtle, all of a sudden, or not all of a sudden, when you listen, you give an opportunity for that individual to voice their thoughts, whatever those thoughts are, and to listen in a way that, in a sense, opens them up and draws them into a conversation. rather than raining down blows, and they cover up and close up. Secondly, it alleviates fears. How does listening alleviate your fears?
Well, for one thing, you're not saying anything that you might be getting wrong. So.
Yeah, yeah.
It also means that you're not just talking to them on a subject that they may already be well-versed in certain aspects of the thing, but you're actually able to talk about the subject which they are talking about, which interests them. And mm-hmm. basically, you know, approach here.
Mm-hmm. We'll get to that. That's a really good point, Henry, and we'll get to, I'll develop that a little bit more in a moment, the idea of a point of entry. But even this alleviates fears in the sense that that as you listen, then you're trying to gauge where their questions are, and rather than going over something that they may already know or that they've gone over before, you have a chance to speak to them on a level that they're interested. They might not tune you out. Back to what Sam said, there's if you're listening, there's you aren't speaking at that point, and so one of the fears is, well, maybe I will misrepresent, or maybe I won't know enough. Maybe I'm afraid of being rejected. And when you listen, you give that posture of interest that also rises from I believe the context of believing that the gospel doesn't depend on how much you know or don't know. So you're willing to listen to someone else and to consider what they're saying.
Consider what they're saying, though, because most of the time, people when they listen are structuring their next comment and not listening.
Yeah.
Trying to think ahead of, you know, that's a big piece that listening is.
Yeah, I've been in conversations like that where someone. And I catch myself doing this. I disengage. I'm already thinking down the road as to what the next move might be or should be, and not genuinely listening. So I'm still thinking from a human perspective, how can I outwit this guy? How can I answer all of his objections even before he raises them and silence him? And what can I do? Rather than showing concern and relying on God to do the converting work. Let's go on to number three. It communicates that you care. We've already touched on this a little bit, but let me observe that very few people listen. I saw that. Vicky said, "What?" I was distracted. What? So you probably all had this type of experience where you're in a mixed setting the whole conversation is dominated by one or two individuals, and all they can do is talk about themselves. And 2 hours later in the evening, you're just kind of worn out, and you go home, and they haven't learned anything about you at all. You've sure learned a whole lot about them. Have you been in circumstances like that?
I don't think I stick around the room too much.
Why not?
You know, that's all the conversation, I will either physically leave the room or mentally leave the room. And
yeah, it is easy to check out on that type of conversation, the one-way communication that's going on at that point. And that's just a good example of one-way communication, a good example of something that's bad, when someone just kind of dominates the conversation with all they think and all they do and everything that's about them, and they have done nothing to engage with you. So what we're wanting to do is to turn that around, to turn the situation around so that that would not be us, so that we would learn to be good listeners. So you can be good listeners by learning to ask leading questions. What do I mean by that? What questions might you ask to draw someone out or to engage with them?
Don't ask yes or no questions.
Mm-hmm.
A technique that's used in lean in business is something called the five whys. You ask why, and then they respond, and why again. And so you're trying to get down to the real root cause of why something's happening.
I had a five-year-old boy do that to me. It only was 25 whys, and it was really annoying. But why is a good question. It doesn't have a yes-no answer that doesn't engage. It's a thoughtful response that's needed. What else might you engage them with? How does that make you feel? How does that make you feel, Sam?
Ask them for what their basis is or why they believe something.
Yeah, you're all really delving down into deep stuff really quickly. You can start on more social levels as well, just by finding out about their family, about their vocation, about their interests,
You have to establish a position of trust.
Yeah,
and that trust comes from oftentimes just, you call them superficial, but if you really care about somebody and you're more interested in their background, where do you come from, why are you here, I mean, when did you move in, you know, just learning them, they'll establish some trust, and when you get trust, then you can get in.
Yeah. And that can be done at a beginning level, just by interacting with them and finding out things that they're interested in. And I remember when I was in college that I was in our choir, and we would stay in homes and congregations where we would sing. And one night my roommate and I were staying with one of the chaperones, and he was just a consummate conversationalist. And while our host was out getting something, he noticed on the table that there was a large picture book of the Taj Mahal. And so he looked at my roommate and I, and he said, ask the hostess if she's ever been to India, she'll show you this book. And sure enough, in the midst of the conversation, he kind of gently steered the conversation about travel and said, "Oh, so have you been to India?" And she just all of a sudden starts to gush about her trip to India, and picked up the picture book and started to leaf through it and point out the things that she had visited. So just observations that can draw someone into a conversation, you'll go home knowing that individual, and that individual will know that you care. And don't do it as a game. Do it because of a genuine interest in that individual. By the way, I think you'll find that people are longing to have someone listen. Yeah, go ahead.
I
actually a desire to learn something. Because everybody you interact with can have something to contribute. And if you're not just trying to draw them out on this thing so that you can give your very knowledgeable comments on it as well, but try to learn something that you don't know.
Yeah.
I think people really do appreciate that, and I appreciate learning from their experience too.
Yeah. Yeah. That's really good. Yeah, and you've probably been in this situation too, where someone asks a leading question just so that they can jump in and show how much they know. And they've kind of set you up. We've talked about talking to strangers, and Leonard jumps in at this point and says that this is an aspect that is good, even in talking to stranger. And he gives the example of a comparison between his wife and himself, and it tells a story of his wife going to the grocery store and just to pick up a couple of things and coming home an hour later, a lot longer than she expected, and coming in the door and says, "Is there a sign on my head that says, please talk to me?" Because while she was there at the grocery store, she became engaged in a conversation with complete strangers about, not just about vegetables, but about things that matter. And he used that to say, well, when I go to the grocery store, the sign on my forehead says, get out of my way, I'm on a mission, I don't want to talk to you, you are a bother to me. And so the question is, what's the sign on your forehead? Is the sign on your forehead one that says, I don't care about you? Or is the sign on your forehead one that says, yeah, I will make the time to talk to you. I'll make the time to listen to you. This is a quote from Leonard. He says, all it takes to let others know that we care is to say, hi, how are you doing today? If we say it in a way that person that we're addressing knows we have the time and are willing to listen to an answer that's longer than one word, fine, we might discover that our lives will begin to resemble the life of our Lord, where our day, like his day, was constantly being interrupted by people who had to speak to him. Remember, we're not making a rule of evangelism by this, that you have to talk to everybody that is coming across your path, but being available to talk, being willing to talk to those who want to talk. Think back to last week, and we were prompted to think of and to pray for those that are wanting to talk, those that are wanting to speak about the tragedy in their life or the troubles that they're facing, and are looking for a listening ear. We were prompted last week to pray that the Lord would be bringing people to us that are wanting to talk. So this is one way to do that. We'll go on to point four, but let me pause there and ask if there are any questions or comments about that. Yeah.
You hear a lot about how beggars on the side of the street just want to be given eye contact and acknowledged.
Mm.
You know, it's not the dollar you might throw in their hat as much as it is just acknowledging them. So I think sometimes in between the conversation, you may never get to that point, but, you know, no matter where I go, I try to just acknowledge people. Because sometimes that's the main thing they needed that day, was just somebody to look them in the eye and acknowledge that they're there.
Yeah.
And it didn't have to go to a conversation, but it could make a big difference.
Yeah. Yeah. It treats them as a real person, rather than looking beyond them or over them or ignoring them. So there's that genuineness, or treating someone as a person.
One experiment where they would dress up a family member or a friend, a homeless person, and have them on the side of the street, and then the and then, you know, one of the members of their family or a friend or something would be, walk right by them and not see them.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So, good illustrations, good comments to communicate that you care by listening and taking time to listen. Number four is that listening provides you a point of entry to speak the message of the gospel. I have in my ministry shared the gospel on a variety of occasions, and not any one of them is the same. Each of those experiences has been different, because the person that I'm speaking to is different. When we talk about evangelism and evangelism training, oftentimes we will memorize a gospel presentation. And there's some value in that. And in fact, if you know, during the summer times, we work with the young people, and some of you have memorized gospel verses or gospel presentations. And there's a reason for that. I want you to be comfortable with the gospel and the scriptures that speak of Christ. But the point of contact or the point of entry is often very different because of the different circumstances that the individual you're talking to are coming from. So when you listen, you begin to understand where that person is, and you begin to understand what the point of where their conscience is pricking them and where their life is out of sync with God. And we believe that the Holy Spirit, as a conscience, does convict us and does bear witness against even those who are non-Christians, and that conscience bothers us. So as you listen, there's an opportunity to interact with places where that person is scraping their knees against Christ or stumbling against that stone. We won't read these, but if you look at the bottom down here, who did Jesus speak to in John 3?
Nicodemus.
Exactly. So who is Nicodemus?
Pharisee.
Yeah.
Educated.
Yeah. And how did Jesus speak to Nicodemus?
As an academician. Yeah.
Somewhat. He does talk, he takes what Nicodemus knows very well. Yeah.
He calls him by name.
He does. He calls him by name. He calls him a teacher of the law. There's a rebuke in that as well, in that he doesn't know the Old Testament scriptures that he was supposed to be teaching. Yeah.
Well, I think also, though, I mean, when Nicodemus first comes to him and says, you know, we believe you're a man of God because you couldn't do these things. And so immediately, I mean, Jesus never addresses that comment. He immediately says, unless you're born again. So he sort of cuts to the quick. I mean, he just dispenses with any sort of that chit chat, and he gets right to the point.
Yeah. We had a good time discussing this a couple of weeks ago when I preached on John 3. And while there's some rebuke, I do think that there's a tenderness. He does call him by name, and he does give him the truth of the gospel. But his approach with Nicodemus is very different. Who does he talk to in John 4?
Well, not the well.
Yeah. And what is she like? Is she an academic?
worships what she knows not what.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, she's not even part of the nation of Israel. She's a she, and yet he speaks to her, which is very significant. She has, how many husbands has she had?
Five.
Yeah. Those might be people we would think, I'm not going to talk to that person. And yet he does, and his approach with her is different than it was with Nicodemus, right? How about in John 5? Who does he speak to in John 5?
Crowd? Or is it the Pharisees?
He speaks to paralytic.
It's the healing of a paralytic. One who is chronically ill and dependent on others. Again, a very different individual. And he addresses that. And John 6, there's the crowds, yeah. We could draw on the Pharisees. You could almost go through the rest of John and do a little study here of the way Jesus would interact with the different individuals that were there. It wasn't a canned response that Jesus spoke, but he gave them himself, he gave them the gospel, but the points of entry were where those individuals were hurting, where there was need, and that's what listening will do for you. As you listen, you have opportunities then to give a timely word, or to tell in your situation what God has done for you in that same situation, or to point them to Jesus in other ways. Lastly, it even gives an answer to those who attack. This isn't always the case, but sometimes those who attack are that's the point of entry, is that they're wanting someone to answer. They're wanting someone to engage. It's possible that might even be a cry for help that is being offered up. Answering not in kind, not with anger, but by listening, sometimes you can diffuse that and maybe even correct impressions that are given. And so Leonard tells a story here of engaging with a waitress who found out that he was a pastor, and she just rips into him about how awful God is, and his response is to say, well, tell me about the God that you believe in. Is that if that's what if that's the God you believe in, I think I'd hate him too. That's not the God of the Bible. And was able to gently correct some misunderstandings and misrepresentations that she had bought into, and to show her Jesus by listening, by not fleeing from that attack, but by listening. So, to sum it up, Leonard says, in traditional evangelism, we look for someone to share the gospel with. The better approach is not to go looking for people to talk to, but to look for people to listen to. There's that provocative way he's trying to make you think about evangelism. And he's impressing on us, I think, the idea of engaging in conversation, engaging in relationship, and by that to have opportunities for the gospel. Yes, Dave?
There isn't any part of this that isn't going to take a fair amount of time.
Mm-hmm.
And it isn't something that can be done without a commitment to wanting to do it.
Mm-hmm.
So this is not an incidental project we can add to the edge of what we do. week in and week out.
Mm-hmm.
It's pretty inconvenient to have to listen to people, not just a person.
Yes.
But more than one on a regular basis to engage with them and find out what their objections are, find out what their story is, as people often like to state it these days. And you have to be prepared to make that commitment up front. Otherwise, you'll be forcing all of these ideas and helps into a already constrained amount of time and
yeah.
degree of resources. And if it's forced in that way, it will not bear fruit.
I didn't follow this track, but I think the way we use our time is a huge consideration in evangelism, and just the making yourself available is a huge time commitment, and it's a commitment on your own personal energy to listen and to care. You're very vulnerable in those circumstances, so. Remember too that, and we've talked about this, that sharing the gospel is not a one event type of thing where you go bang, there's the gospel, and you kind of dust your hands and say, I'm done sharing the gospel with this individual. Instead, sharing the gospel often happens in conversations that last months and maybe even years, where by example, by conversation, you're demonstrating, you're establishing trust, you're pointing to Jesus, and in God's timing, that bears fruit. Dan?
I'm struck by the need for faith when you, pretty easy for me anyway, to have a whole body of knowledge that the things I believe, but hard to put into practice, or I find what I'm doing is actually antithetical to what I'm pretty sure I believe. So for example, you're talking to someone and you find yourself not listening, trying to make the right argument, maybe a number of these fears, etc. You're going through all that. Maybe what's also going on here is you're not really walking in faith that it's God who saves. So you would never say, certainly not in class here, well, I believe it's about making the right argument and say it the right way and you're a dynamic speaker and all this. Well, no, we would never say that, right? But then they might act that way. You know, I'm in a conversation and I would find, wait a minute, do I really believe that it's God who's working here? It's not really all about having the right answer. So if I really believe that it is that way, maybe I'm more comfortable listening, being patient, not getting too... you know, too agitated or concerned or fearful, but just resting. And that rest really only comes through understanding that God's at work here.
Yeah.
And I'll do my, hopefully whatever means he has to deliver, might be through my words.
Yeah.
Might be through my ears.
Yeah, he can't handle this. Yeah. Yeah,
well,
Randy.
You know, kind of a... On a bigger issue, on the fear piece, I mean, it seems like in the society and culture there's so much greater hostility toward the gospel than, say, that there was, you know, 30, 40 years ago. You know, it's like if you went on the University of California, Berkeley, and started evangelizing, you might get killed, I mean, literally. So, is there also kind of a sense of wisdom? Is this the right place? Is this not the right place? Is this the right time? Is this not the right time? I know Paul says, be ready in season and out of season, but, I mean, how do you sort of gauge those types of situations?
Yeah. We talked a little bit about that last week, about... praying for the teachable moments and not going further if it appears that there's the fish aren't biting or something like that. Now I do think there's a place for as I said last week, speaking the gospel publicly and spreading the seed, even though there may not be any fruit that's born from that. I think there's a purpose in that.
I think Tim Keller is a good example recently. Was it Princeton where he was going to be given this award and he was going to come and deliver a series of lectures? And very hateful responses to that. And so they withdrew the award and he still agreed to come and give the lectures.
Yeah.
I think there's definite risk. And you certainly can't give one answer and say, okay, that's what you do. But I certainly admire his courage.
Yeah.
Going in that situation.
Yeah.
How they feel about it.
Yeah. Yeah. Stephanie.
Question.
Yeah.
Could you maybe comment on addressing when you have a young family that you're just... Because we were talking about making this a deliberate thing, putting time in our schedule to have these opportunities. But we also have our own children we're evangelizing too, so just like the wisdom and balancing this.
Yeah, that's good. Yeah, Vicki?
I would say that there are seasons of life and not to despise where we are when we're with young children. I'm coming out of that season and finding more of these opportunities. Being content where God has put you and evangelizing your children and knowing that there will be a day where there are these other... So do we make one seem more important than the other? Maybe is the question. I'm just a stay-at-home mom with my kids.
Well, if you put it that way, that really comes across... poorly, but yeah, that's true. That's true, and I'm not making light of that.
I don't know if that's what you're addressing.
And just, do you take this home and we're like, all right, we're canceling all kids' activities and we are evangelizing.
I think if you speak truth into your kids' lives, you have to be aware of their own place in life. So there's a place where you need to listen.
Yeah.
So we've spoken into their lives. We evangelize to them. We teach them.
Yeah.
We can't make them Christians.
Yeah.
Our oldest son, Dan's heard this, so I can talk about this, not about him. So one time, he said, you can't make me a preacher. And that was a defining moment in our relationship because I said, no, this is your own decision. So when do you listen? You need to know what they're hearing and absorbing of what you've been teaching them.
Yeah.
The same as you would listen to a scripture. So listen to them.
Yeah, I was going to say the same thing, Bob, is that that we need to practice this with our kids. That we need to listen to them. It can't just be one-way communication. It can't be just pounding on them. There needs to be genuine care, genuine interest in them as individuals, listening to them. And then think of the bigger picture and the season of discipling them and evangelizing them can pay rewards or the fruit that's born of them being then followers of Christ and sharing the gospel and disciple makers of others.
Not your decision for them.
Yeah.
And you'll look back and you will not regret the time that you spent focusing on your children and your family. Who else is going to do it? Who else should do it?
Yeah. So, real directly, you could say, what's the sign on my forehead with my kids?
Yeah.
Is the sign on my forehead, I'm too busy with work? I'm too busy with this, that, or the other thing. I'm too busy. Oh yeah, you could forsake your family for the sake of someone else, and that communicates. And I take that to heart as a preacher. They talk about preachers' children who are like the cobbler's son who has no shoes. The preacher's children forsake the faith. That. Hannah, then Dave, and then Ben.
I thought that was excellent. I was just going to
Yeah.
Spend quality time with your children and evangelize. When I was little, my kids used to, my parents took us to nursing homes to visit, and that was intentionally so we could be socialized and so that we would also sing and dress things. So it was for our benefit, but it was also supposed to benefit the residents.
Yeah, yeah. So that's a good point. And as you raise your children, you'll be modeling that idea of, yes, I can talk to others. I can take that time, and not just turning that away. But they can see that. Dave.
I think there is real danger in trying to move to far ends of either pattern. You know, I have small children, so I can't do anything, or I don't have small children, so this is the only thing I should be doing. There's always a danger in seeing that great of attention. And I think in a sense it demonstrates also a lack of faith to say, God, give me people in my life that I can listen to, given the circumstances of my life today. So sure, you might not have as much time as the next person or somebody who doesn't have kids, but that doesn't mean God doesn't have people who are in your life who need to hear the gospel, who have some relationship that you can't form and be engaging with them where you're at today.
Mm-hmm.
You know, ask God to bring the right type of person across my path so that I'm always doing some evangelizing with people. I'm always investing in other people's life, however little or much that might be relative to the other duties I have.
Yeah, yeah. And God knows you as well, and I think it is appropriate to be praying that way. By the way, we're going to have a day of prayer and fasting for evangelism in the congregation coming up in May. And there'll be more details coming out about that. Well, let's bow in prayer as we close. Lord, thank you for opportunity just to think about evangelism in our class today. And Lord, I pray that we would not just be thinking about it, but that it would be stirring in our hearts both the passion and the desire to share the good news that we have with others. And pray, Lord, that you would give us a listening ear and a caring heart with our children and with those around us. And pray that you would be bringing to us those that are asking questions. And Lord, help us to listen and to care and to share Jesus with them. In his name we pray. Amen. Thanks. You're dismissed. Yeah.